There's texting, now Blexting, the BL for blight. You may have heard of the app that lets Detroiters take pictures of abandoned properties and upload them to a citywide database. How's it going? Jerry Paffendorf is the 33-year-old CEO of Loveland Technologies. That's the startup behind Blexting. So, Jerry, first, how did it start?
Sure. So here in Detroit, we're sort of on an interactive property data adventure, I guess you could say. Last winter, we set up kind of a NASA-style headquarters for Detroit's version of the moon landing, which in Detroit is actually trying to inventory for the first time what's happening with every single property that comprises the city of Detroit. I'm sure the secret is out by now that Detroit has a lot of distressed real estate. There's a lot of blighted property. And the city itself is rather large. It's 140 square miles and about 400,000 properties. And up until the citywide survey we did using Blexting, nobody really had a sense of what the scale of problem properties were.
And I know last winter Detroit set up the Blight Task Force. Your company was commissioned. You're a software company there. Your company was commissioned to do this. How did you think of doing what essentially is sort of crowdsourcing?
Sure. So our company for some time in Detroit has run a website called whydon'twyownthis.com, which has made public information about properties very accessible to Detroiters. So it's kind of like x-ray glasses for who owns everything and what's at risk of foreclosure and things of that nature. And so the Blight Task Force invited us in and they said, hey, at the behest of the White House, we are trying to get on top of the blight problem in Detroit. What would you guys do if we could do one thing? And we suggested, well, probably the best thing to do, since estimates vary widely of how big the problem is and where the problem is, why don't we actually literally send Detroiters out to every single property in the city of Detroit, use a mobile phone app to photograph every property, and then enter condition and occupancy information about every property. And then we can put that into one central database so that you can do things like press a button and say, show me every unoccupied property in the city of Detroit. And it was kind of quiet in the room for a second. And then somebody was like, is that a good idea? Is that something we want to do? And then it was like light bulb, like, obviously, if that's possible, that's something we need to do. And so we did it. And then at that point, we got the green light. We took the deep breath and we're like, can we actually pull this thing off? And, you know, of course, we did end up doing it. It was 40 working days of 150 Detroiters working 9 to 5 to photograph, you know, 380,000 properties during the snowiest winter in recorded Detroit history. But we did it.
Isn't that amazing? And it does so many things on so many levels. It saves the city from paying, you know, full-time employees to go out and do this. It has, I'm assuming, some sort of forward-thinking top technology behind it. And what has it told you?
The survey found about 50,000 unoccupied structures and about 10,000 maybe unoccupied, meaning they had signs of unoccupancy, but there also maybe something was going on there. That's an incredible amount of vacant stuff. That's a lot of atoms that aren't currently getting any loving, right? And then once you have that, once you've kind of recognized that scale, then you've got to get a little bit more fine-grained about thinking about, okay, of those, which are fire damaged and or otherwise heavily distressed enough where they need to come down, and which ones can we actually rehabilitate or auction or put onto the market? So it's almost like seeing like a, you know, genetic scan of your city. You can start making those much more intelligent decisions about how to allocate resources and say, okay, if we can get together $25 million, we could actually deal with all of the blight that just needs to go away. And P.S., we also have, you know, 50 properties that could be auctioned because the rehab costs appear to be modest enough that somebody could take it on and maybe get a loan to do the construction. So, you know, to start with, it's kind of like going from Detroit not having glasses about how to fix itself to suddenly being able to see what the problem is. And now it's going through the process of really making those kinds of decisions.
Yeah. Jerry Paffendorf, people are talking about you and the work that you're doing in this company. Why are you there in Detroit? You could be in Silicon Valley.
I'm actually sort of like a Silicon Valley refugee in a way. Before I moved to Detroit, I was in San Francisco. I was doing the kind of typical internet startup thing, I guess you could say. You're supposed to run out there and get the venture capital money and kind of like be in that scene. I guess there's maybe different kinds of entrepreneurs. Like some people identify a way to make money and they go and they try and do that. And then other people are maybe attracted towards like problems. For me, Detroit had amazing problem, has amazing problems. And you couldn't help but notice, like, kind of working in the world capital of where you're supposed to go to build new software technology and stuff, that problems that cities like Detroit have were not being addressed at all. And so it seemed kind of insane to me that that was the case, that we were locking up all the talent in this relatively affluent area where companies are kind of more encouraged to, like, help figure out a way to get half-price coffee or rent out your extra bedroom in your fancy apartment because everybody has one of those. So and not taking on things like, oh, I don't know, Detroit just went bankrupt last year, so clearly something's going wrong with like municipal technology, and it's got these crazy property problems that lead to things like the mythical $500 house in Detroit. And it was stuff like that that made me go, okay, my spider sense is really tingling. There's something going on here. Detroit could benefit in some way, shape, or form from information technology and systems to put the city online that are not being worked on right now. And so I came, and honestly, what happened is Detroit greatly improved me, I think. It kind of like pulled me into a really real city that has, you know, underlying every one of its overlapping crises, there's really an information crisis that exists here, you know, and that's one way that I felt I could use my talents was to try and help design information systems that could be useful to a city like Detroit. And then, of course, what we found along the way, too, is that even though Detroit has sort of the loudest, most interesting problems, you know, which I think make it so that, you know, it is generating some really cool new technology that other cities, frankly, you know, wouldn't. I think it's one of those trade-offs. You know, there's something unique about it that'll engender, you know, almost like fungus and fertility and stuff will come out of like some pretty dirty situations. Like Detroit, I think, has a lot of creative flowering that are coming out of its unique circumstances. But I also think they have wide applicability to, you know, many other municipalities. That's something we're just beginning to explore. If, you know, if blight is huge in Detroit and we need to use Blexting to finally get that, you know, capture that picture for the first time so that we could work on those problems, how else can these tools be applied in other cities? How can we help well-functioning cities function even better? How can we help cities that have similar problems to Detroit use similar techniques to also recover? And then what are we going to find if we start applying this kind of parcel-based mapping to the entire country? I'm sure there are towns and cities and rural spaces that just have hidden opportunities for all sorts of possibilities, you know, that kind of come out of this poetic question of that website, like, why don't we own this? Why don't we know what's going on with property in our country? If we could have those x-ray glasses, what would we do with it when we knew it was there and how to act on it?
Well, I was looking at your CV online at your website. Uh-huh. Do I understand you studied the future? What was your major?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So I left high school after my sophomore year and went right into community college to learn kind of graphic design and do fine art stuff, and then transferred to a state school for fine arts, and then found myself with a pretty creative mind, but wanting to work on technology, basically wanting to like invent for the internet, but not really having that kind of technical or engineering background. So I asked around and I was pointed to this program at the University of Houston called Studies of the Future, which was a whole curriculum that was kind of like one part kind of like a business degree, and then one part kind of like history of the future, if you will. Like, how do people historically conceived of the future? How do they think about change? You know, my focus there was a little bit scattershot, kind of like, you know, like a Google Maps meets kind of like a Sim City style thing. So I think in a lot of ways what I'm doing right now is kind of, you know, recognizing that everything in the world is going online, including the space of the Earth. What we're working on here is one kind of angle on that. You know, it's not just putting addresses on the satellite maps, it's putting the actual geometry of the spaces and places that comprise the world and making that visible and updating in more and more real time so that, you know, we as humans can kind of consider other options for where to live or how to improve our communities and things of that nature. So yeah, technically, I guess I'm a professional futurist, but I haven't attempted or desired to call myself that in a minute now. I'm more of a, you know, practitioner, you know, as an entrepreneur and, you know, a builder of companies and services like what Loveland makes.
That's Jerry Papendorf, CEO of Loveland Technologies, the small company behind the big project there, Blexting, mapping the city's blight. Jerry, thanks so much for talking to us.
I appreciate it. Please stay in touch. I'll talk to you guys later.
Yeah, we will. Something tells me that guy's going far. And Jeremy, where do you and Peter O'Dowd go next?
We head to Atlanta and Macon, Georgia. We're going to be in Macon, focusing on the Senate race in Georgia on Wednesday. Then we go to Florida, and we're going to be talking about the governor's race there on Thursday.
Okay, safe travels. Here and Now is a production of NPR and WBUR in association with the BBC World Service. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is Here and Now.